Welcome to Retail Shift, a monthly podcast from Axiom, offering insights into the changing realities and future opportunities for data-driven retail, consumer brands, and travel marketing. My name is Michelle Fitzpatrick, and I'm your host. With more than 25 years' experience in data-driven consumer marketing, I've had a front row seat to a myriad of changes in how people shop, buy, and engage with brands. Now, for Axiom, I cover the retail, consumer brands, and travel industries. And I have to say, there's never been a more exciting time to be a marketer in retail or consumer brands. Now, let's face it, consumers have fundamentally changed how and where they shop. And retail shopping and technology have collided to create a new world with new rules and new challenges for marketers. In this podcast series, we'll explore the future of data-driven retail and consumer marketing through interviews with experts who are shifting the conversation and thriving in this evolving marketing landscape. The topic for today's Retail Shift podcast is CCPA readiness, data privacy and ethics. Now, the California Consumer Privacy Act, referred to as CCPA, becomes effective January 1st, 2020. This new regulation will have profound implications on the advertising industry. Taking pieces from Europe's General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, CCPA is the United States' first step in the direction of regulating consumer access and control of personal data in a comprehensive manner. And while CCPA is just for California, other states will surely follow. And there's talk about how this may evolve into a universal national legislation that overarches all of the state regulations. Today's guest is on the forefront of data privacy and ethics legislation, helping legislators understand the value that advertising and marketing industry brings to our society and how the marketing ecosystem works, so that resulting legislation will strike the right balance between protecting our privacy and promoting a healthy, competitive, ad-driven marketplace. He's worked on many facets of data privacy and ethics, having spent 7 years as the Assistant Attorney General in Arkansas, as well as working for a law firm where he focused on data ethics and privacy issues and cases. He's also spent the last 18 years at Axiom on the service provider side, helping marketers and IT professionals make the right choices when it comes to data governance, protection, and privacy programs. Today, he leads corporate policies, procedures, and strategy practices for the collection and use of all forms of data at Axiom, ensuring ethical sourcing and use of consumer data. Please welcome to the podcast, Jordan Abbott.
Thank you for having me here, Michelle. It's a real honor and privilege.
Well, it's a privilege for me, too, because you're a busy man and it's tough to get on your calendar. So I'm really excited that you could join me today for the podcast. Now, Jordan, we know that CCPA is a really hot topic for most U.S. marketers and IT organizations right now. So I thought we'd start with some of the basics. This new Privacy Act in California was signed into law in 2018 and goes into effect January of 2020. There may be an extension, I think, until June of 2020. I believe the act includes requirements to begin tracking things in 2019. In layman's terms, what is CCPA and when does it really go into effect?
Well, the CCPA is a very wide-ranging statute. It requires a number of things of covered businesses. One of the things that it requires is transparency, increased disclosures regarding what data is collected, what it's used for, with whom it's shared. It also requires more rights regarding access and about the data that you have collected about the consumer. It also affords consumers the right to delete data that covered businesses have collected about consumers, California residents in particular. And we'll talk about whether clients or retailers should apply the CCPA nationwide later on. But another right that is available under the CCPA, of course, is the right to opt out. It's a wide-ranging statute. Perhaps most important for your clients and retailers and CPG brands is this little-known provision dealing with anti-discrimination for taking advantage of your rights under the CCPA. It's supposed to take effect January 1st of 2020. There's a nuance there that potentially extends the effective date for enforcement by the Attorney General to 6 months after regulations are published and promulgated. The California AG is currently drafting those regulations in 7 broad topics. We expect that they will publish them as early fall, maybe September or October. After a comment period, it's probably likely that they will be finalized in November or December. So it's possible the effective date for enforcement by the Attorney General could be as late as July 1st. However, the effective date for all of the provisions is January 1st, 2020, and that's what I'm trying to evangelize across the entire marketplace to expect. You've got to be ready by January 1st. Moreover, it's possible that that even if the AG's enforcement date is delayed, private right of action for security breaches for unreasonable security measures will be effective very immediately after January 1st.
So the point of all that is that there's going to be new information coming as the rest of this year unfolds. But everybody needs to be ready for January 1st, no matter what.
That's absolutely right. And an important point is the statute has a 12-month look-back period for data that you have collected 12 months prior to the subject access request. So as a practical matter, if you're a covered business, you may have obligations right now to make sure to understand and know what data you're collecting about a consumer today. That could be, that would be subject to an access request if made in May of 2020.
So, in other words, if you haven't been already actively working on all of this, you're probably behind.
Oh yeah, you needed to start immediately, and we're encouraging our everyone to get started right now. Do not waste another minute.
Now, I think people initially thought that CCPA was basically GDPR light. That's not really the case, is it? There are a couple of differences. Some of it's nuanced and some of it are significant differences. Does CCPA cover the same territory or require the same consents as GDPR?
So there are a lot of similarities between the European Union GDPR and the California CCPA, but there are some important differences. Some of the similarities is the right of access. The ability for the consumer to know what the covered business has about them. There are also similarities regarding the right to opt out under GDPR speak, the right to object to processing. But there are some important differences between the CCPA and GDPR. One difference is under GDPR, citizens have the right to correct data. Under the CCPA, currently that doesn't exist. Another important difference is the wide range of penalties or remedies in the event of a violation. For example, under the GDPR, for intentional violations, a business could be subject to a fine up to 4% of their global annual revenue. There's nothing like that approaches that under CCPA, but it can be. Having said that, it's still very serious. The AG, the Attorney General in California, can seek a fine up to $7,500 per violation. So there are some similarities. There are some differences. The CCPA, you're not required to have a legal basis to process data, which is a hallmark of the GDPR. But there are important similarities.
So if you're prepared for GDPR, which everybody, you know, who went through that market need is already taken care of, but just being GDPR compliant doesn't make you 100% ready for CCPA.
Michelle, no, that is absolutely right, that GDPR compliance does not mean you are automatically ready for CCPA. You have to understand what data you have and where it's going. You have to provide broader access. There are a number of things that are required under CCPA that's not required under GDPR.
Got it. Now, I've heard there are some concerns about the expanded definition of personal information in CCPA. How is that defined, and what do we need to know? How should we really think about it? And kind of the extended question is, do you think there'll be any changes to that definition before CCPA is actually implemented?
Well, I'll answer the last question first. It's very possible that the scope of personal information could change. And the California Attorney General is considering regulations regarding the scope of definition of personal information. There is proposed legislation to amend the definition of personal information. One potential amendment could be to clarify the scope of public records, to bring public records outside, more clearly outside the scope of personal information. But to your first question, you know, what is the definition of personal information and how broad is it? It's incredibly broad. And I kind of a rule of thumb I'm using is a you know, basically any information that relates to an individual or a household. That could be anything. Now, there are 11 categories within the CCPA that drill down into the definition of personal information. Things like inferences. Does Michelle like to travel? Does she like rock music? That sort of thing. You know, whether the covered business has biometric information, like a fingerprint, like voice recordings. If there is a wide range of personal information that is clearly and expressly set out in the statute. Another example would be things like cookies, IP addresses, unique identifiers. Those are expressly identified and listed as personal information under the statute. So my view is any information that is that directly relates, well, not only directly, but indirectly relates or is capable of being tied to an individual would be considered personal information under the statute.
Well, that's pretty tricky in this omnichannel world in which we live in, right?
Yeah.
So these new privacy rights give the consumers in California the right to know what people are collecting about them and how that data is used or sold. What does the regulation stipulate, and how should marketers or IT teams deal with it? What are the really practical applications for retailers or consumer brands marketers in terms of that data collection and data utilization?
So the CCPA is very broad, and sometimes it's a head-scratcher as to what it requires. But with respect to data collected, it requires a number of certain things. It requires a covered business to disclose the categories of sources from where it gets personal information. So, for example, a retailer or a CPG company could would have to disclose that it gets information from a data company, data broker. Wouldn't necessarily have to name the company, but that would be up to the covered business. It would have to disclose the purposes for which it has collected the personal information. It's got to disclose the categories of personal information it's collected. Importantly, it's got to disclose the specific pieces of information that is collected. So if, for example, if a retailer has a licensed data from a third party, like Axiom, for example, it would have to disclose that it has collected this attribute, perhaps an age range, perhaps the interests, those demographic and lifestyle information that is collected from this third party, or from the data that is collected from the actual consumer. It's got to provide that to the consumer in a easily understandable report and format, and as well as disclose to them their rights under the CCPA, the right to deletion, right to opt out, other rights.
Well, when we're thinking about that data collection, I think some people are under the impression that CCPA will impact what data is collected or how it's sold. But CCPA doesn't really prevent or prohibit the collection or sale of data. It simply requires transparency for what's collected and how it's used, right?
Well, I think I have two responses to that. The answer is yes and no. The answer, the yes answer is, it doesn't say you can't collect the data, except in a couple of instances. A third party cannot license data to a third party, like a retailer, unless that third party has given explicit notice and an opportunity to opt out. If that has not happened, then I would argue and believe that the CCPA restricts whether data can be collected. But assuming that's the case, then I think it's okay to collect and use that data. The other restriction would entail the requirement not to sell not to collect or sell data regarding minors. The statute has a restriction that says if you're under 16, you have to have opt-in consent.
And that's a little different from GDPR, right, in terms of the minor?
GDPR sets a threshold of 13. In some countries, it can be raised up to 16.
So what do you see as the evolution of data collection today and tomorrow in terms of how each of us owns a part of maintaining trust and value with customers and their data?
Well, I think the CCPA and GDPR and the landscape with certain privacy and security incidents is leading companies to ethical data use and more accountability. Ethical collection of data to make sure that it was collected in an appropriate manner with appropriate notice and choice of how the data, what data is being collected, how it's going to be used, and with whom it's going to be shared. And also an ethical data use to make sure that it is only used in a responsible manner and not beyond the scope of the data collection. I also think, in addition to ethical data use, I think other states are going to follow the lead of California and propose GDPR or CCPA-like statutes. They will want a Me Too type situation. If California has granted their consumers rights to increase transparency, opt-out, deletion, and what have you, they'll want that for their consumers as well. So it goes back to the discussion we were having earlier. I actually do believe if once you're while you're getting ready for California, you should expect to or plan on providing consumers, regardless of where they live, those same kind of rights. From my point of view, it doesn't make operational sense to provide California residents certain rights but not extend those rights to other states.
So if you're thinking, you know, I don't do business in California, I don't need to pay attention to CCPA, then your advice is, no, you got another thing coming. Everybody needs to be looking at CCPA because we expect more, not less, regulation.
That's right. I mean, right now we were tracking between 13 and 15 states that were considering CCPA-like statutes. And, of course, there has been talk of a national privacy law that could that would be very similar, if not preempt, California and surly states. So even if you're not doing business in California right now, rest assured it's coming. And I would also point out here, I kind of wonder and am skeptical about your belief that you're not doing business in California. It's very possible that you've got you meet the threshold for complying with the CCPA and don't even realize it.
So if I'm doing business through e-commerce, for example, I may have consumers in California. What's the threshold? Is it like 50,000 consumers?
Yes, $25 million in annual revenues or a collection of personal information on 50,000 California residents, or you derive at least 50% of your revenue from information sharing.
So I think there may be a tendency to think that this is a problem. CCPA is a problem, but you know, said another way, it's maybe an opportunity, right? The intent of the act is to protect people's privacy, right? To make it put guardrails in terms of how data is collected and used for the benefit of all parties. Would you say that it's going to end up being a positive thing in the long run?
I think so. I think it will increase consumers' understanding and comfort level with the expanding use of data. I think it's important that data be under control. Similarly, you know, I like to say you can use the data, don't lose it, don't misuse it. Mm-hmm. Because there are incredible benefits that come from sharing and use of data. Lower prices, free products or free lower price services. But at the same time, consumers want to understand that how their data is being used and be given a choice for control. It remains to be seen how many will actually take advantage of those rights. And my personal expectation is we'll see a spike shortly after the effective date. And then it will trail back down to historical norms where many companies have offered opt-outs for you know, a couple of decades, if not longer. And they only see a handful of opt-outs a day. I think in the long run, we may see that return to that that historical norm.
Well, so that kind of brings up a point that I'd like to ask you about. So With the act, if a consumer asks a brand to tell them what information the brand has about them and asks to have their information deleted or what have you, that brand needs to be able to tell somebody the data they have, how it's used. But to me, it also means they need to be able to verify that the person asking about that information is, in fact, the right person. So can you talk a little bit about verification and authentication and how important that is to the actions the brands need to take?
Sure. It's incredibly important, Michelle. You want to make sure that the data that you're delivering is to the person who is making the request and that you're not delivering data about another person to the requester. The statute requires covered businesses to respond to verifiable requests. And one of the regulations that is currently under consideration is what is the definition or what constitutes a verifiable request. And there's a lot of uncertainty right now about what will be permitted to covered business will be permitted to request in order to respond to a verifiable request for access, and what will be required to accept in the course of a verifiable request for subject access. But actually, and there's another important point, a covered business is not permitted to require registration with that covered business in order for the consumer to take advantage of those subject access rights. So at the end of the day, I think it's important that the covered business be thinking about tools that they can that they can use to verify the information supplied by the consumer. Say, for example, if Michelle sends provides her name and address and certain other information like a phone number, the cover business will need to check that against another database or maybe even its own database to make sure that it is accurate and that they're responding to the correct person. But the more sensitive data that the covered business has, it seems to me, the more scrutiny they need to apply to that verifiable request, and more care they need to take to ensure that they are responding to a valid, verifiable request.
And what's interesting, well, that's new in terms of this particular regulation. That's not a new territory for us here at Axiom. We've been dealing with verification and authentication in financial services and insurance for a very long time. So it's kind of what's old is new again, right? So that capability that we've deployed for years and years and years to help brands do the same kind of authentication now can apply in this new use case, specifically around this component of CCPA.
I think it is a ready-made solution that some of our products can help clients and retailers. We can help with challenge questions, and we can help verify the information supplied. I think it's something that retailers should look into.
Now, you've mentioned a couple times some of the kind of damages for violations. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, does this act have any bite in terms of the penalties? And what should our listeners know about potential damages for an infraction?
Well, it does have some serious bite. It could have been worse. The ballot initiative that the law actually replaced had a $1,000 statutory damages per violation, and it had a private right of action, meaning consumers and class actions could have brought lawsuits for violation of the CCPA.
And per action is per individual record impacted,
yeah,
right?
Per incident, per individual record. It could have been astronomical and catastrophic. But make no mistake, there's still a lot of bite in the final version of the CCPA. The California Attorney General has a right to file lawsuits and seek injunctive relief against any covered business that is in violation of the act, and can seek $2,500 per record, per consumer, per incident, up to $7,500 for intentional violations of the act. That in and of itself can be astronomical. Separately, there is a limited private right of action under the statute for unreasonable security measures. So if you're lackadaisical in your security patch updates, or you don't do appropriate risk assessments, training, if you're just plain sloppy in your security profile and practices, then consumers and class action lawyers can file a lawsuit and seek damages between $100 and $750 per violation. So that in of itself is a serious bite.
So a lot of organizations have experienced breaches. I think I saw a report the other day. There were some 300 breaches in the last 10 years alone. So with this particular regulation, the financial penalties are substantial. So previously, having a breach meant, you know, some loss of brand equity and some expense to clean it up and fix it. But now there will be significant penalties.
Right. No doubt about it. And you can bet a dollar to a donut that there will be class action lawsuits testing the limits and the breadth of the CCPA post January 2020.
So we know that there's a lot of diligence that brands need to take that they haven't been required to do in the past. And it sounds like we're saying that they need to be, you know, totally accountable for privacy as well as data ethics in ways that they probably haven't dealt with before. And it's not likely to be a skill set that most marketers have in particular. You know, I'm not saying that anybody was intentionally not trying to do the right thing. But now there's a little bit more teeth in terms of what people need to do and what they need to think about and how they need to operate. Where do you think people can learn more about what's required of them and what they need to maybe think about or do differently? Are there resources that are easily available?
Well, I would first refer the listeners to axiom.com and our own CCPA website. It has some privacy briefs about certain aspects of the CCPA, and we're going to be adding additional points of view all the time. Another place that they may want to look is to the California AG's website, and that's their CCPA specific website. And then finally, I would consider referring your listeners to the International Association of Privacy Professionals website, IAPP.org. That has a ton of good resources, and stuff is being added all the time. It is a very complex, you said it was an exciting time to be in marketing. I could equally make the case that it is a frightening time with all the legislation and all the risks that that are facing us. But if we can navigate it, I think everyone benefits. I think consumers will benefit with increased transparency and control, and I think businesses will be allowed to innovate and actually know and have a clear understanding of the road ahead.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the excitement, you know, it used to be that maybe data privacy was, you know, the legal team worried about it and nobody else really talked about it. But now everybody's talking about it. So it's not a hot potato, but it's in the room. It's at the big kid table.
That's absolutely right. I don't think you could have said it any better. And that is the hallmark of privacy by design, is that having a seat at the table, being involved at the from the and the ideation of a new product or service or new infrastructure to make sure that consumers are protected.
Yeah, I know we have a process where, you know, if a client has a use case, a way they want to use data, we run it through a review process to make sure that use case is appropriate for all of the regulations that might apply.
That's right. I mean, we call it a privacy impact assessment, and it looks at the beneficial uses of the data, whether the data was collected appropriately, in terms of not only from the original source, but also from the supplier, whether it's in compliance with not only the law, but with contracts. And at the end of the day, we do a final check, you know. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. Mm-hmm. There are many instances where this data passes all of those tests, but is it fair, legal, and just to the consumer?
And that's part of the ethics component, right?
That's right.
It's what makes sense, mm-hmm, given the context.
Right.
Yeah. I get this question a lot. So, you know, clients will say, you know, oh, my legal team is taking care of, you know, we'll say, do you feel like you're ready for a CCPA? And they'll say, oh, my legal team is all over it. But maybe kind of the question for you is, like, who really owns this? So does the legal team own it? Does the brand own it? Does the vendor supplying or handling the data own it? Who owns this issue and this opportunity?
I think my answer is everyone owns a piece. Ultimately, the brand itself is responsible for compliance with the CCPA with respect to the data it collects. So it is not simply pointing, we have a service provider or a data supplier.
You can't outsource it, right?
No, you really right. You can't fully outsource it. Now, Axiom has responsibilities and compliance obligations with respect to the data that we collect and that we license to our clients. But by the same token, our clients have the responsibility for the data that we process for them as their service provider.
Because so, only a portion of the data that comes into their environment, wherever it sits, is data supplied by Axiom. As the example, there's a large portion of the data that's coming through the brand's collection, through their website, their contact center, you know, their order systems, the point of sale systems, whatever those various capabilities are. So the data is coming from lots of places, and the same rules apply regardless of the source.
That's right. That's right. So it is not just a legal issue, and for the team of lawyers, if you're fortunate enough to have a team of lawyers, it needs to be a cross-functional team and response. It needs to include the legal team, to be sure. It needs to include the privacy professionals, if your organization has those. But it also needs to include the product or data owners and scientists. They need to understand what the statute requires and the process flow, where their data is, how it's being used, and with whom it's being shared.
And whether or not you're buying third-party data, you still need to deal with CCPA, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. It applies regardless of the source of the data.
So thinking about clients who are marketers or IT professionals who are just starting to think about this, you know, do we have specific things we would suggest that a brand should do to begin, if they haven't already started their process, to begin? And if they're partway through their process, to make sure they're doing the right things right?
Mm-hmm. Well, they really need to get started as soon as possible, especially with the effective date.
And don't wait for all these regulation pieces to come out.
Unfortunately, yeah. They can't wait. Every day is an opportunity lost. But one of the first things they need to do is determine whether they are, in fact, a covered business by the CCPA. We talked earlier about the threshold, you know, $25 million in revenue, you know, 50,000 California residents, that sort of thing. You also, but there may be exceptions to that statute. For retailers, it's kind of iffy. Most of the exceptions relate to, like, Graham Leach Bliley dealing with financial institutions or protected health information for covered entities under HIPAA. Regrettably, I don't have a lot of good news for retailers. The exceptions, at least the way I read them, don't really give them a lot of things to be happy about or a lot of optimism. So assuming a retailer is covered, the next thing they need to do immediately is begin a data inventory. Understand what sort of data are you collecting? Where is it being collected from? What is it? How is it being used? Where is it going? All that data inventory is foundational and fundamental to being able to provide subject access requests. You can't do any of the other stuff if you don't know what data you have. You can't properly honor a deletion request if you don't know where your data is stored. You can't opt out of data if you don't know what data you have, about whom it relates, and where it's stored. Data inventory is foundational.
Yeah, and I guess because, you know, data in most businesses is collected lots of different places, the MarTech stack, the AdTech stack, operations system. So, you know, kind of bringing that data together from all of those places is important. I would guess identity management, being able to bring the data together to ensure that it all kind of, all the data about an individual is able to be brought together. And then that third component being the authentication and verification. So you've got to have a method of being able to establish when somebody reaches out and asks about their data that they are, in fact, the right person. Do I have that at a high level?
Absolutely, you do.
So you said
identity resolution is key. That, too, is foundational. Mm-hmm. But then you have to have the other two prongs that you mentioned as well.
So I love the statement you said a little while ago about use it, don't lose it, and don't misuse it. So I think that will definitely stick with me. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time for our discussion today, Jordan, and this has been really exciting. And kind of it sounds to me like we're going to need to visit again in a couple of months as this continues to mature and we get more information from the AG's office. So I certainly hope you'll come back and speak with me again.
Absolutely.
And because our time limitation for this podcast, this is not really a comprehensive outline of the Act and its stipulations. So I really suggest that if someone's interested or has questions about the Act, they should contact their legal and privacy team, and or feel free to contact us at axiom.com, and we'll include all of the ways to get a hold of us in this podcast. But it's kind of the idea is make sure you know where you stand in terms of organizational preparedness. So I want to thank our listeners today for joining us for this podcast. This series is really designed to help deal with what we're calling the retail shift. And we're going to continue to explore a lot of different shifts in data-driven marketing for retailers, for consumer brands, and travel. I hope you'll join us for our podcast next month, and please be sure to visit our previously recorded podcast episodes. Until next time, I'm Michelle Fitzpatrick. Get with the shift.